Introducing The Vet Detective, brought to you by PSI Vet. A quick and candid series for veterinary professionals, where we uncover the underlying challenges that limit your business's potential. Featuring your host, PSI Vet's Kimberly Schaefer.
Hello, Vet Detective listeners. Welcome back. On today's episode, we have a very special guest. We are welcoming Walter Brown on our episode. He is a veterinary technician liaison for United Veterinary Care, and he is a well-known comedian and edutainer, very well-credentialed as an RVT. He has a specialty in VTS, in emergency and critical care, and he's making a lot of changes in the veterinary industry. So welcome, Walter.
Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you all for having me, and thank you for inviting me on the show. This is very exciting. I'm ecstatic about our meeting today and kind of talking about the different things that's going on in the veterinary industry. So again, I appreciate you having me for this conversation.
Yeah, definitely. Today's episode, we're going to talk about a couple of different things, and I'm going to pick your brain, but I wanted to just invite our listeners to learn a little bit more about you. You do have a persona that most of us are pretty familiar with and love, but tell us a little bit about working in practice and then kind of your transition to edutainer.
Awesome. Funny story. I ran away from vet med a long time. Probably like all of us, we kind of grew up loving animals, right? Growing up loving animals, having pets. And as a teenager or as a child, you know, I had one of those moms who really just kind of like wanted to pound, going to school into you, like getting a career. And she knew I loved animals. And she's like, you should go and be a veterinarian. So a lot of times I heard, go be a veterinarian. And, you know, me and my mom and I, we butted heads a lot because we were so much alike. So I never really like, all right, I'm going to go to vet school or whatnot. So I did all the things to kind of run away from vet med, but I actually, it came back full circle. And I always tell people, like with vet med, you, it's three things that you must understand in life. Sometimes you have a calling. Anything you do in life, you have a calling. Then you have to find the purpose in it, and then you're fulfilled once you find that purpose. So for me, running away from it, I actually was big on music and film. So I was a band geek. So I was in a band for most of the time during high school, and I got my scholarship to Morris Brown College, which a lot of people like, what is Morris Brown College? And the best way to describe it is, it was the rival band and drumline. So I had a full scholarship to that school where I actually was in the movie Drumline the entire time. And unfortunately, after the movie Drumline, the school, Morris Brown, lost their accreditation. And I was, you know, had to figure out where I was going to get my education, like what I was going to do. So I didn't want to go back home. So I went to Fort Valley State University, where they had the veterinary technology program. And that's where I got my bachelor's in science from the University of from Fort Valley State University. And within the program, we are, as many programs, you have to do an externship. So I end up having to do an externship at the University of Georgia, where I was, again, I really love animals. I had a lot of different skills. During that time of being in Fort Valley, I actually failed out of tech school, dropped out of tech school, and then had to go back the following semester once I got my life together and try to figure out what I wanted to do with life. But end up at the University of Georgia doing my externship. And I was there after the externship, they actually hired me on. And I was there for 11 years, where I met my fiance and now wife. And I worked in the emergency and critical care department for those 11 years as a ICU emergency nurse. And I also worked with the externship programs that the students that rotated through as myself when I was a student. So I was able to work with those students a lot. And again, enjoying that career path for 10 years or so. And then I started indulging into a lot of film and comedy or whatnot. So what people also fail to realize is I also have a bachelor's in digital cinematography, where I, like year five at UGA, I started to get burned out. Like most technicians, I was starting to burn out and questioning, why am I doing this? So I looked for an outlet, and videography was my outlet. And that's where I kind of started doing videography stuff. And I decided I didn't want to turn most of my dreams of being a photographer or a cinematographer into a career. So I end up eventually coming back over to VetMed or kind of refocusing on VetMed. And that's where I started doing my VTS at year five and finally got my VTS in emergency and critical care. And pandemic hit, pandemic came around. And I had already been doing comedy for a lot of different groups, Georgia Bulldog Nation, Black Greek Letter comedy deals. And, you know, I just tried to leave VetMed out of a lot of my comedy. And the pandemic happened. And I can remember it was like it was yesterday. It was probably Labor Day or Memorial Day. I forget which one it was. But people were bringing all these wildlife creatures in, all the animals in or whatnot. And it was just becoming overwhelming. And I did this one video about leave wildlife children alone. And I woke up the next morning and a Georgia vet student like messaged me. He was like, bro, your Facebook is going crazy. I'm like, what are you talking about? And there it was. This video had done like a million views overnight. And I was like, holy crap. So, you know, I start reading through the comments on the video and people were like really appreciative. Like, bro, we needed this comedy during the pandemic and X, Y, and Z. So I started doubling down on it and kind of putting out more videos and more content out there. And it was more, again, was serving the purpose of alleviating a lot of the problems we had during the pandemic. People were so stressed out. People were worried about losing their jobs. We were seeing people not having childcare. We were having a lot of different things that were happening in VetMed. So doing the comedy was a way to kind of help alleviate some of the toils and some of the struggles that we were all dealing with. And people accepted them well. Most people accepted the videos well. But I did run into a few roadblocks. People thought a lot of the videos could be harmful to our industry, thought they were harmful to our clients or harmful to the industry, just with a little bit of laughter. And I did receive a lot of like hate mail or comments or a lot of people that were not on par with the things that I was saying or doing, even though my intentions were good. And I definitely dealt with a lot of backlash, and I did go through a moment of like panic attacks and depression during that phase or whatnot, but I was able to keep a smile on my face some kind of way and continue to do those videos. And as I met more and more people while I was doing the videos, I realized that people really genuinely cared about the videos that I were doing and that it was really helping them. And it actually helped me climb out of that phase of thinking that I was a problem more than actually helping. So there's definitely been a learning factor in there. So through the whole VetMed deal, there has been some roller coasters, some ups and downs, but I will say all in all, I believe everything that I've gone through from vet tech school to failing out of vet tech school to being a VTS to having to deal with the comedy issues and dealing with a lot of things, I believe that it was warranted and it's something that was needed and it was part of the purpose, the calling and the fulfillment. So on the VetMed deal, I've had a great run, but now I am working with United Vet Care as veterinary technician liaison, where I help build out these externship programs for our United Vet Care family and our veterinary technician technology programs.
That's awesome. I'm not excited that you had hate mail, because I personally followed you throughout the pandemic. And, I have a group of, all of my veterinary friends, veterinary technician friends, and mm-hmm. all of us were kind of like, are you following Skinny Go Live? Are you watching these walk around videos? Like, this is incredible. It's like,
appreciative.
I think the last video before yours that I laughed so hard on is when there was like a series of videos on YouTube where they did like, they had humans acting out things like a ear cleaning as a pet. And it was like, it's just that like touch point with a relevancy and just, us all being like, oh my God, yeah, yes, we've dealt with that. Oh yes. Oh my gosh. These are the things that we've wanted to say for so long, but we can't.
Right. And it's just the way you say it. Sometimes you just got to say it. And I think that was a big part. One of the greatest comments that I was like, I don't know how to take this comment, but I was like, great. She's like, Walter, soon as I found your videos, I used to like get off of work, and I live in California, and I drive through this red light. If I keep straight through this light around the curb, I'll just drive off the cliff. And a lot of days I thought, let me just go through this red light and just keep going, not turn that corner. She's like, you know what? Now that I found your videos, I don't even care about driving off that cliff anymore. She's like, when I get stressed out at work, she's like, I even have videos that I have bookmarked that are older videos that you've done that just, I watch those when this day is like, you know what? I need some Skinny Go Live in my life. And I'm like, that is awesome. So I do appreciate everyone that supports and enjoy the videos. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, we love it. Let's kind of shift a little bit and talk a little bit more about how that gave you this platform and ability to really kind of dig deeper into, you know, veterinary technician industry problems. Mm-hmm. You know, you are in a position where you're working with, you know, externships with veterinary technicians. So I'm assuming that that is, you know, helping to bring more credentialed technicians into the field. By school, correct?
Yes. I think with it, when I started the liaison position and whatnot, and in the position, again, I built out externship programs for United Vet Care. I was a little bit worried, you know, leaving the floor, right? Leaving the floor, I won't use my skills anymore. How will I impact people? Like, how will I be able to help continue to do the things that I'm doing leaving the floor? And it was one of those moments where I was a dark moment the first 2 or 3 weeks. I'm like, wow, I'm not going in the clinic. I'm not inspiring an assistant. Cause my biggest thing is always like helping someone like achieve a new skill. Like, Walter, I want to put a central line in. I used to hear that all the time. I was like, cool, we'll get you a central line. I'll find you a patient so you can get a central line in or whatever it may be. And I was like, how will I be able to, you know, continue that impact without being on the floor? And it was very scary, but I've realized in this position, I'm actually able to touch many more lives and provide many more resources in this position now that I'm off the floor. So I can kind of go to these different veterinary technology programs and see these students and have these conversations. And I think the biggest thing, even with social media, that drew me to wanting to be more of an advocate for our profession and for our industry is that I would make these posts, and depending on if it was a funny post about whether it's about pet owner or something a pet owner would do or something we have going on in our industry, whether it's a situation about credentialing or non-credentialing, I would see in the comments that a lot of veterinary technicians did not give themselves the credit they deserved. And that was my biggest thing, is like, hey guys, y'all are amazing. Why are you selling yourself short? Why are you saying you can't do something or this is impossible without even trying? Like, and I think in our profession, in our industry, again, we are a service, and I tell people all the time, this is the one thing that's hard about our industry that's not as hard as people in other healthcare industries. We are a service industry in the healthcare profession. And that's hard. We have to serve people in a healthcare profession. Meaning, if your doctor goes in and he says, hey, your blood pressure is high, you need to stop eating X, Y, and Z. But doctor, no. You need to stop eating X, Y, and Z. When the doctor does that to us, we don't argue with the doctor. The doctor tells us these things and we're done. We feel shame for it. We're hurt. We're mad because the doctor told us. But they told us a truth to make our health better. Well, what happens in our industry, we have a pet that's in the middle of that. So you have an owner and then you have ourselves. So what happens is that animal does not have a voice for itself. So the owner has to make the voice for that pet based off of what they know every day with that owner. You know, what they know, that, you know, being with that pet every day, they base their voice off of what they know about their pet because they're with them every day. And then we have to serve the pet through the owner by the things that we have learned medically, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where we have a harsh clash or a harsh understanding. So then that leads us to bargaining sometimes. A lot of times we give owners the gold standard option. And if they can't afford the gold standard option, here are the other options. You know, a lot of time in human beings, there are no other options. This is what has to be done. Now, there are a lot of things that account for, like insurance or financial or whatever it may be. But these are a lot of the different things that we have to deal with as healthcare professionals in a service industry that a lot of healthcare professionals don't have to deal with. So that brings a lot of stress, anxiety, a lot of things that we have to deal with as veterinary technicians, being that we are the workhorses in the clinic. So we really have to deal with a lot of those things. And seeing, you know, making these different posts and whatnot, I read the comments, and that's the one thing, and I see veterinary technicians selling themselves short, or we can't do this, or my doctor doesn't want to do that, or we'll never get to this point. And that just made me want to double down more on being the best version of yourself, man. You got to be the best version of yourself. And it's hard for me to take a lot of, and one of my posts that I got a lot of backlash from was I don't do excuses. People are like, that's not fair to say, Walter. Well, I'm like, I understand that you may think that's not fair to say, but you're looking at a guy that failed vet tech school, dropped out, had a kid on the second time around in vet tech school, did his VTS, and I still kept going. Mm-hmm. And I continue to make strides. So it's hard for me to hear your excuse. You know, it really is hard for me to hear. And I understand now. And a lot of times I ask myself, do I push too hard? Maybe I do push a little bit hard. But sometimes you got to push people for them to go. And a lot of times if you push them, they'll go, you know. And I just have to be careful about how I push people. But, you know, going back to the question, you know, it's just that seeing people sell themselves short, especially veterinary technicians, it was one of the things that weighed heavy on my heart. And I'm like, man, y'all are amazing, man. Y'all are absolutely, and I've seen some of them do amazing things. They'll post a picture of I wrapped this Robert Jones bandage today. And I'm like, that is amazing, Robert Jones bandage. And they're like, really, Walt? You think it's amazing? I'm like, yeah, because you're looking at a guy who sucks with bandages, you know? So them hearing from me, Walter told me my Robert Jones bandage was amazing. They are now going forward. And it's just not something that I can do. It's something that we all can do. Like, be a cheerleader for someone who is trying to level up. And that was my biggest thing. I want to be a cheerleader for our profession as a whole and just try to help our entire profession level up.
I like that. Yeah. I mean, I go in and talk with practices, and sometimes I'm always trying to figure out who I'm supposed to talk to, whether it's practice manager or, right, you know, whoever's a decision maker. And so many times I hear people say, oh no, I'm just a tech, or, oh no, I'm just an associate. I'm like, so basically you are a unicorn and you're holding this practice together then, right? Is that what you're doing?
Right. And I mean, it's that same thing, like when that's one of the things I hate when people, I'm just a tech, or I'm just an assistant, or, and the other ones, I'm just a stay home mom. Do you know how much money that costs for a child to be in care? Trust me, because I've paid that before. You're not just a stay at home mom. You're not just a technician. You're not just a veterinary assistant. So I definitely agree with you. Like this, I'm just a, should be something we learn to eliminate in the clinics.
I agree. I want to kind of get into a little bit of a controversial discussion as we're talking about advocating for veterinary technicians, mm-hmm, is credentialed versus non-credentialed. Mm-hmm. You know, I personally am a credentialed veterinary, I'm a licensed veterinary technician. I know you, mm-hmm, have credentials as well. I am involved in some different platforms and groups, and I do see this kind of this, mm-hmm, conversation, or actually it comes up more as an argument back and forth between who's valued more, who has the right to be called a technician, whether or not it's important or not. And I just kind of wanted to get your opinion, because I think, in my opinion, I do think that in general, veterinary technicians are highly undervalued and underutilized. Oh, totally. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, a comparison, I would say, between states that have, you know, credential, mm-hmm, laws versus states that don't, and kind of where we're at in the industry.
Very, very good question. And as we all know, that's a loaded potato there. As far as the
bacon bits and cheese and sour cream.
Oh man, all, chives and all, a little salt, pepper, sour cream. That is what that is. And I'm like, whoa, that's loaded. So as far as the industry, I'm with you. We definitely need to move towards credentialing more all over the states, all 50 states. The reason being, a couple things. Medicine is changing. Medicine is changing. Animals are living longer. Technologies are advancing, all right? And when things are advancing and technologies are advancing and different medicines are advancing, we have to move with the times. If we don't move with the times, we're gonna be left behind, and then we're gonna allow someone else to invade that industry, right? With an example of that, right? I told someone a few weeks ago, right? The coronavirus was actually, they actually have a vaccine or a shot coming out for FIP, right? This new FIP deal. And what people don't understand is FIP is a coronavirus. So a lot of the viruses that they were, or vaccines that they were developing for the COVID-19 actually failed the trial of working for humans, but these same drugs were actually introduced to the vet med side of things and have been used and have been formulated to cure a lot of different coronavirus deals, FIP being one of them. And that's one of the ones that we know is very deadly, and people have been working on trying to figure out how can we vaccinate against that. Well, the introduction of COVID-19 actually brought that into place. So with things like that change, right? You got things like that changing. Another thing that's happening, dialysis. People don't understand. I tell people all the time, I wow them all the time. I have this radiograph of a cat. And when I put the radiograph up, they're like, whoa, that cat has 3 kidneys. What is this freaking thing all about? And I'm like, well, what you don't know is that's a cat that has had a renal transplant. So when we do renal transplants in cats, we actually, and this is again, what people don't know, when your cat needs a kidney, you can actually go to a place where you get a cat that is specifically raised for a kidney. Now, when you actually do this service, you have to adopt the cat as well. So you adopt the cat that you are harvesting this kidney from, right? And they attach this kidney to the other unworking kidney. So they don't take it out. So it looks crazy where it's like 3 kidneys. They don't take the non-functioning kidney out, right? But these animals have to be on cyclosporin, they have to be monitored. They may have to go on dialysis, ultrafiltrations. Who is utilizing these machines? Veterinary technicians. The doctor does not have the time to do the ins and outs of veterinary technology. That's why we are technicians, because we should know this advanced technology. So with times are changing, when people are spending $50,000 to save their cat with a new kidney, we also have to advance. If we are not allowed, if we don't level up or move forward, we are going to not be able to serve the industry or the owners to the best of our abilities. So credentialing allows you to get that formal education. And I tell people, like, that's the thing about it. Credentialing allows you to get that formal education. You get formal education so that you can again, level up. And we have different states right now that recognize different technicians, or whether they are credentialing or not. Some states are like, nah, we don't see the need to recognize credentialing from techs, basically saying anyone can come off the street and do their job in the clinic. Where other states are like, no, we recognize that we are moving in a time frame where we actually need to have skilled technicians doing things so that we don't have to repeat and repeat and repeat. Back in the day, 60s, 70s, when people were just holding dogs and just giving them a shot, sure, you may not need a credentialed technician. But I tell people, times change. As far as back in the 1960s, when they needed an animal to vomit, do we know what they were doing? They were pouring salt down the dog's throat to make them vomit. Now we have learned pouring salt down a dog's throat actually caused them to become hypernatremic. Wow, who saw that coming? So now we have a whole nother problem with hypernatremia. Just because we did something 30 years ago doesn't mean that it's good now. Think about it. We were exposing ourselves to Fixer and Developer 30 years ago. We don't want to expose ourselves to that now. You know, I mean, we didn't know anything.
How many times did we sit there and watch pets recover howling because they were on tour base?
Right.
We didn't know. Their system, you know?
Exactly. So, and that's the thing. So if medicine is changing and things we're learning change, we got to move and change with it. And when people are dragging their feet, now we are seeing the backlash of that, because again, a lot of states are like, we're not recognizing. And me being a little bit more inside on the group and corporate levels, I am seeing the value prop in these things. For instance, I did some numbers, and states that don't utilize credentialed technicians or recognize them, they have the lowest amount of productivity in the clinic. Their value as far as productivity is down. Their technicians are not in. And the question is like a chicken and the egg race. Like, are the numbers down because they're in one, not utilizing their technicians, or is production down because they don't have credentialed technicians? So again, you have to move with the time so you can improve yourself. Again, technology is changing, animals are changing. So we have to move towards becoming more credentialed to get more formal education so that we can provide for the pet industry. The second thing that I like to point out is, like, if I walk up to you and I tell you, if I walk in the clinic and I say, hey, Kimberly, my name is Walter, I'm a veterinary technician, I'll be overseeing your patient today. Now, you not knowing anything about animal, what sounds better? Hey, I'll be a veterinary technician, I'll come in here, I'm just overseeing your patient today. Or me coming in and say, hey, I'm the veterinary nurse, I'm coming in here to oversee your patient today, right? a lot of times, even though we are fighting for name changes or have this advocation towards whether we want to be called nurses or technicians, we have to remember the pet owner is the person that we are serving and the pet. So if I can give my pet owner a peace of mind knowing that their dog would be watched by a nurse, because it sounds like I've influenced, you know, the word nursing has given them that sense of relax, like, okay, cool.
I feel
I understand that versus a technician. Now, I know we all got our difference about whether we want to be called nurses or technicians, but the fact of the matter is we are all doing nursing skill on these animals, all right? So whether you say I'm a nurse, whatnot, just say I will be providing nursing care for your animal tonight. Hey, or you can say that, hey, I'm Walter, I'm the resident veterinary technologist. I will be providing nursing care for your animal tonight, right? It's all about verbiage and wording and how you can do that. So again, credentialing is a big thing as far as value, productivity, moving forward in the industry as far as advancing in veterinary technology. So I think it's one of those things that we have to do, and there is not, and it shouldn't be any rebuttal or any kind of, you know, division amongst assistants and technicians.
Yeah. I feel like I find that there tends to be this, like, I'm better, you know, I'm an on the job trained tech, and I can do just as much, or I can run circles around this other mm-hmm. person who is a credentialed technician. And it's such a disservice to our industry as a whole, because totally. We are both here for the same thing. We're both here to help a pet and be an animal caretaker and do nursing care on these patients. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't be fighting with each other on whether or not, you know, you should or shouldn't be able to be called a technician. Let's elevate everyone. If everyone correct. Can get further education, if everyone can get further certification, isn't that what we want? We want to be paid more. We want to have better, we want to be utilized more. We want to have career path, you know, acceleration.
Absolutely.
And I think instead of fighting ourselves, I think we really need to direct this more to, you know, practice owners, veterinarians, and even higher going up into legislation, because, you know, a doctor doesn't, you know, a doctor thinks, why would I pay someone more when I can mm-hmm. have the same, when I can have the same things being done by someone that I trained.
Right.
But then when I look at that, like you said, sometimes these technicians are not calculating drug medications. They're not doing, you know, intubation and things. Sometimes they are, mm-hmm. but sometimes they're not. And they're being underutilized, and they don't have, they don't have as much ability to stand back and say, like, no, this is wrong. I learned this, and this is not what we should be doing. We should be doing it this way. You know, they just do what they're told because that's all they know.
Right. It's funny. I probably should have. I mean, some people know this. Most people don't. I don't know if people watch like the show Critter Fixer Country Vets, right? But it's a show called Critter Fixer Country Vets.
Now, oh yeah, I know them. They're actually PSI members. Great.
Yeah. So what people don't know is that that's my uncle. And they're like, wow. Wait, how did, yeah, they were like, I mean, I never think about it, because it's like, that's just family. Like, you know, and they're like, wait. And I'm like, yeah. So I can never forget, like, you know, as a kid working for him, uncle or whatnot, he had a doctor's appointment one day, and he was a guy all about, he's like, hey, 9:00, we need to be rolling. The surgery's in, we got to get this money. I'm like, all right, whatever. But 9:00 came around, he wasn't there. Because he told us he had an 8:00 appointment. He'd be there by 9 rolls around. He's not there. 9:30, 10:00, 10:15. We hear the front door slam, and it's a little bell on the door. I'm like, oh, that's Doc, y'all. So everybody's scrambling, like, they working and doing stuff, like, because we ain't had to do nothing. You ain't been here. So he's like, everybody to the front. You know, no clients are in the building. I'm like, all right. He's like, y'all know where I've been at? We're like, the doctor? He's like, yeah. What time was my appointment? We're like, 8. What time I just walk in this door? He's like, 10:15. He's like, now, my entire time there, you know how long I saw the doctor? We're like, no. I saw him for 10 minutes, and I've been there since 8:00. I'm like, so why are you telling us this? That's kind of how I want my clinic to run. If they don't need to see me, they probably just don't need to see me. And we were like, wait, what? So it start working out, because that's when we coined the tech appointment deal. Now, this is 15 years ago. Now, tech appointments is something new right now. But I've been doing tech appointments. And it was like, hey, when Mr. Bob, he was like, I'm going to teach you guys. Mr. Bill coming here every day. We all know Mr. Bill is the farmer two blocks down the road, but they got all these Cocker Spaniels, and his wife loves their Cocker Spaniels, but she goes to Garden Club. Mr. Bill is responsible for bringing the Cocker Spaniels into the clinic. Well, Mr. Bill doesn't care about what food diet he was on, how was his stool the other day. He doesn't know, and he doesn't care. He's literally there to get Ms. Margaret dog shots like she told him that morning so she can get back to the house. So those were our tech appointments. And we asked, hey, do you need to see Dr. Hodges? He's like, no, me and Dr. Hodges, great. I came down here to Hawaii. Do I need to get anything else? We looked through the record. Nope, shots up to date, fecal good, heartworm, flea. All right, I'm going to just take it back to the house and get back there on my tractor. That's all Mr. Bill wanted. So again, we didn't have to grab Dr. Hodges to go in that room, right? He just needed to get his shots. We were allowed to do shots due to the Georgia law and whatnot. He didn't need a rabies. It was his yearly deal without the rabies. And we were good to go. So we started utilizing tech appointments more and more and more. And Dr. Hodges figured out, let me utilize my technicians more. This guy has 9 rooms. He's one doctor, and he runs 9 rooms in a day by himself. And you don't hardly see him because his technicians take care of almost everything unless he is needed. He is like, hey, my job is to do surgery, diagnose, and prescribe. If I don't have to do anything else, I want you guys to do it. And I think that was a great way of empowering his team. And again, everyone that works at that clinic right now have been there for 10 years plus.
Yeah.
10 years plus.
That's
so
awesome.
Totally, definitely. Utilization is a big deal. And I just want to ask you, Kim, I know I'm supposed to be on interview here, but as far as what are your thoughts on the job train veterinary technicians, those that actually go to school and then don't take their VTNE or their testing or credentialing, and those that just say, I don't want to go to school, or that have the opportunity to go, but they don't go because they don't feel like it's worth it or valued?
Yeah, I think that, so when I went through veterinary technician school, I had worked in a practice that I live in a state where a license is required. And, so I was not able to do, I was able to do things like draw blood and suck you fluids and things like that, but I really couldn't do IV catheters. I didn't do any anesthesia monitoring. So when I went through school, I had watched it a million times, but had never done it myself. But I was, one of my classmates worked in an emergency hospital, and she was doing all of those things. She was, one of the best technicians that I'd ever met. And I asked her, I was like, why are you going to school when you don't have to? And she said, I always wanted to, have a little bit more physiology behind what I was doing. Mm. And, it was incredible watching her go through school, because she just kept saying, like, I've been doing this all this time, and I really didn't understand the physiology behind it.
Right.
And so I don't know that she, like, her technical skills didn't change. Her technical right. skills didn't improve.
Her why did.
Her why did, absolutely. And her feeling of accountability for everything that she was doing was so much stronger. And I thought that was so remarkable to watch. Right. As far as, If I was a technician who was not credentialed, and I was working in a practice that I liked, and my owner let me do whatever they needed, they taught me stuff, and I was overall happy with my job, and someone came and said, why don't you go get a license? If it was going to change my salary by $1 to $2, maybe $3, why mm-hmm. would I invest my own money to spend 2 years in at least 2 years, if you're doing mm-hmm. it virtual, it's 3 right. or more, so that I could just have this license that my practice doesn't care about. It's probably right. not going to change my salary very much, and I'm certainly not going to earn back what I put in school in the few years that I'm getting a raise. Yeah, I don't know if I would, but that's where I see the problem is because I think every single on-the-job trained technician has probably that same feeling. But it's because our industry doesn't back them. Our industry right. doesn't support them. Like, yes, why right. would I want to go to school? You'd want to go to school because in our practice, you're going to be able to do all of these things, and you right. can't do them right now. And we are going to pay you more, and you're going to have responsibilities. And that would be my reason to want to go get my license. And we just don't have that. It's not across the board.
I totally agree. And I love the fact, and I think that was it for me. Like, I don't think my technical skills really improve much because, again, I've been working with a vet all my life, right? And I worked with veterinarian all my life. Mom wanted me to be a veterinarian, so I ran from it. So I knew I could drop a catheter and do all this stuff before I got to tech school. But once I learned my why, I appreciated my technical skills so much more. Like, once I knew why, and the one thing that someone told me that I share with every student, if you know anatomy and physiology, you know everything. I wish someone would have told me that in tech school. Like, now I learned anatomy and physiology, and I just love anatomy and physiology now that I focus more on anatomy and physiology, all the technical skills that I do, it makes sense why I'm doing it now. You know what I mean? It makes sense why, you know, and I do a whole lecture like, and people don't think about it. Like, why did your doctor tell you to put that dog on D5W? I don't know. Like, and I got a whole lecture about fluids. It's like, that's the most hands-on drug we use every day in the clinic as a technician is fluids. And we couldn't tell you what they are for. You got lactated ringers in there. You got plasma light in there. You got normal salt. Why? Why we just can't have one fluid? Oh, I don't know. Have you ever asked your doctor? No, I didn't think about it. He just told me to hook them up to
this. What happens if you put it on sodium chloride only and you don't put it on what they're supposed to have?
Right.
What does the electrolytes have to do with all of this?
Exactly. And when you learn that beauty of it and you like understand, you're like, oh boy, I love this. And then when I teach that, I love to see them get the, hey man, Walter, like I had one, they warmed my heart. Hey bro, can we please run the blood work? I want to see what that osmolarity is on that DKA now. Did we get it? You know? And it was like, I taught you that.
Yeah.
You learn that, you know, and it's just that great feeling. And I think, and one of the biggest things, and I won't call the state out, but we have to move forward because one of the states, and I had a conversation with the NAFTA department and then the Veterinary Medicine Association in that same state, they don't get along. The NAFTA part, the Association for Technicians and the VMA, they don't get along. That's a big problem in any state. Yeah, when you're a veterinary, oh my gosh, I don't even want to call that. But it's been, but here's the thing about it that's sad. They've been butting heads for 30 years. 30 years. So imagine this is a state that does not recognize credentialed technicians, but the technicians want to be recognized. So they don't see eye to eye. They've never seen eye to eye for 30 years. Now that they've not seen eye to eye for 30 years, the state that funds paraprofessionals, the nursing program, veterinary technology program, EMTs, whatever these programs are, they have said and sent a letter to both of them saying, hey, we will not be funding you all for 2023 because your profession does not make $50,000.
Wow.
So now what we are at the risk of is losing all of those veterinary technology programs that are public programs in that state. But now everybody wants to stir up a mustard now. And I got the phone calls and I love being to try to be a superhero, but I'm not. And they're like, well, Walter, can you help us with this? And I'm like, y'all been fighting for 30 years. And now it's a problem now this year because the state said they're not going to fund the education of the programs. Now, the fact that those of us who are in these two different programs will probably be out of a job. Now we want to work together and play together, try to fix the problem. And I'm like, this could have been avoided. So, you know, this is why we have to move forward with stuff, because this is what happened. When we sit there and not, when you say, hey, we they don't have to be credentialed or whatnot, and they're not getting paid, and we keep getting these $34,000. And as long as QT in the corner store down the street is paying $15 an hour, and we're paying $13 an hour, we're never going to get anyone in the clinic. Yeah. And then what happens is the state will do their comb and audit every 5 to 10 years and say, hey, we can save some money in the budget, y'all. This veterinary technology stuff, they ain't making nothing but $31,000. We don't need to fund that. Let's get this money to these people making 50. And then we shoot ourselves in the foot.
That's insane.
I have seen this. And I am trying to help a crew right now figure that out. Because again, every state did it. And the thing about it was everybody wants to figure out. And the biggest problem is grandfathering in. Technicians felt like who've been in the industry for many, many years feel like they should be able to grandfather in to take the vet VTNE, right? That's their theory. And there are some loopholes people have been trying to jump through to get that done. But what they don't tell you is the people who have found the loophole to take the VTNE without going to school have failed it miserably. But they will not release those numbers of people. And I've tried to talk with the different ABS to say, hey, do you have numbers of those who did this loophole to kind of get in? You know, but they can't give me those numbers, but they said, we can assure you it's less than 75% that have passed. Wow. So you have to go to school. You have to go to school, get the formal education. I don't think people understand. On that exam, it's not how many toes does the dog have. How many eyeballs does he have?
No, you got to remember what cattle breeds there are.
You got to remember what breed there are. You got to know how to do some math. You got to know about osmolarity, what's hypertonia. You got to know stuff.
Like, you got to follow the drop of blood through the heart.
And tell me, and how did this blood become oxygenated? So I think I want people to know, like, we're not sitting here saying, hey, we don't want you to pass your test, but, you know, that grandfathering phase has gone. In Georgia, we had that same deal. And what we did was we opened it up for grandfathering. I like to let people know, grandfathering it can only be opened up per state. Most states, whether they know it or not, have already opened up their grandfathering clause way back in the 90s for those who wanted to become credentialed that had not gone to school. So they went through their grandfathering clause. Those, if you get to take it once, if that, you are out of the grandfathering clause. If you passed it, congratulations. You went through the grandfathering clause and you're a veterinary technician, and we're going to give you your licensure. But after that grandfathering door closed, every veterinary technician that wants to become credentialed has to go and get formal education from an AVMA accredited program. And I don't think people understand that. Those who want to be grandfathered in, you're 10 years old. Like, we opened that before you were born. So go to school. So I think that was the biggest thing there, is like the opening up of different, like, testing, allowing people to come in and out or whatnot. But I think it's very important that we definitely move forward in looking at that credentialing. And again, like you said, we love our on-the-job trained technicians. And I think that we have to make sure that everybody understands that they have a role to play and they are significant and important in that clinic, whether you're an on-the-job trained technician, whether you're an assistant, whether you're a receptionist, whether you're an animal caretaker, whether you're the maintenance man. You know what I mean? Like, everybody has that role. And I think everybody needs to understand that, you know, we have to level up in order to get to that point. You know, I call myself the Florence Nightingale of the 2000s, because Florence Nightingale had to do the same thing, right? Everybody was calling themselves nurses before 1966. You could be they were taking butter knives and she's pregnant. She popped it out, cut that umbilical cord, just hand me something, you know, and they figured out this is bad. Animals, people were dying, babies were dying, people were dying. They had to change that standard. And that's why Florence Nightingale fought for that. And again, that's why we were having a problem with the nurses, human nurses, allowing us to call ourselves nurses, because they felt like they fought for that. Yeah. And I can't take that away from them. They did. They fought really hard for the name nurse. So for us to take that away from them or to be included in it, I think it's a conversation that we have to respectfully have with them. But what we have to do is our own homework on our back end. We got to become standardized. How can we say we want to become a standardized name when we're not standardized across all the states? Right. So I think that's our biggest deal. Now, we have to work on getting every state to recognize that credentialed technicians are important. And once we get every state to recognize that, then we can have a deeper conversation about how can we become on one page with one name. We got LVTs, CVTs, RVTs, and then there's a new one. What's the new one? LMVT.
LVMT.
LV licensed
veterinary medical technician. LVMT. That's in Tennessee, I think.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a whole nother. So I think there's a lot of things that we got to do. I think we all are sharing the same why of why we need to change, but I think we have to strategically get together and put some plans together on moving forward with that as a group. Yeah. So.
Well, and even when I talk with practices and I always ask, do you have any credential technicians? Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times I get the answer is, you know, I have one, I have a few, I have none. I would love to have one, but there aren't any. And honestly, that is the answer that I'm getting the most often is, I'd love to have credential technicians, but they're just like not available.
They're not available
because, like you said, they're not going to be available in states that don't recognize it or
right. require it. And to me, it seems like it ain't rocket science, but I mean, I guess I can't be that way because again, you're having the same conversation with them. It's like, you're not going to get them.
Yeah. They're not going to stay around in a place that they're not valued. But the other thing too, is that you do have highly valuable employees that are on the job trained technicians. Yes. You don't have to go searching for a veterinary technician. You can invest in that person that you have in your practice and elevate them. Why wouldn't you want to elevate them? They are helping you stay open.
Correct. And I'm glad you said it, because I said that same thing. I was like, before you tell me you need a registered veterinary technician, are you utilizing what you have?
Right.
Are you empowering they don't want to. I was like, you got technicians in here that are brilliant, right? They're on the job trained. Some of them probably were just like me and that other young lady. They got all the skills. They got great skill set. Now they need that educational part of it, right? Level them up. And I tell a lot of DVM, like, that's one of the biggest, y'all not cheerleaders for your technicians.
No, not at all.
If you are, you need to be, I tell them, you need to do one or two things. And people are like, what's a fullback? And I'm like, I got to stop using that analogy. Like, you got to be a cheerleader or a fullback. Either be on the sideline cheering them on because they are out there making a way for themselves, going to get educated. Cheer them on. Keep cheering them on. Or be a fullback. Help them. Clear the path for them. Go to Susie. Susie, you are a great technician. You got amazing skills. I think you would benefit from a distant learning program. I want to see you get your license. But why, doc? Are you going to pay me more? Of course I'll pay you more. Maybe I won't. Depends on how good you are. But I want to inspire you. I believe in you. You are so good at what you do as a technician that I believe you will be even a better technician if you like, not saying that you're not already, but I believe it. You got to be a cheerleader. You got to be an inspiration to aspire them. And I tell people, that's what I do. Like, and they ask me, like, if I had to wait, tell people, like, I try to figure out, why do I do what I do every day? What's my why? My why is I know that I have the ability to wake up to inspire someone to get aspirations. You know, aspiration, you got to get your own aspiration. Aspiration is an individual deal. I can sit here and talk to you blue in the face and tell you, and you'd be like, yeah, Walter inspired me. But you got to find your aspirations to go in and actually do it. I can inspire people all day, but I can't make them have aspirations. So I take that for what it is. I know I'm able to inspire people. And some people are finding aspirations when I inspire them, right? But people have got to find their own aspirations. And I think, to your point, like you were saying, you know, every clinic, you may have one technician, you may have two technicians, you may have one technician with five assistants. You know, if that one technician is doing great, don't focus so much on that one technician. Now you need to work with your assistants and leveling them up, right?
Yeah.
You know, assistant schools or whatever it may be to lead them to the next path. We got to create a path for vet med career success. So again, being a cheerleader or a fullback is totally something that the veterinarian has to do. And I don't think veterinarians and practice owners know how much power they have as far as being a cheerleader and inspiring their staff.
Right. And the crazy thing about it is these practice owners typically are paying the cost of turnover. They're paying for constant job postings to hire people.
That. You're right.
And it's like the amount of money that they are putting in turnover and all of these other things, they could have had paid for in the investment of the technician, you know, investment of putting that technician through school.
I didn't even think about that. And that is awesome. You're right.
Yeah. So like, it's crazy to me that there isn't more career path plannings. They are starting. Luckily, I think practice owners are starting to understand that to get good veterinarians, that they have to do some, school payment, some tuition reimbursement to get these doctors. But they're like, hey, do it for your technicians. Get them to, even if they don't care about having a license, it is going to elevate your practice and it's going to generate more revenue. Like the average in 2018, the average credential technician brought additional like $94,000. That was in 2018.
I love that number. I share that statistic every time. It's like they bring in a credential tech brings in like 18% more than a doctor who brings in like 7.8 or something. Yeah. Is that crazy statistic? And you are right. And I also challenge people because you're on that rim of like, you know, consulting or whatnot, and you would probably have a better idea than me, but Like, we got to start changing and leveling up how we incentivize technicians as well. Like, you know, some of us were talking like ProSal, right? Would ProSal work for like veterinary technicians? For me, with my externship program, what I am bargaining on or working with is if a technician does a externship program at that clinic and or extern at that clinic, and then they hire them on or they take the job there, let's give them retro pay. We're giving them retro pay for their 16 week. We're doing 16 week rotation. You are there. So pay them for that time. You know, of course they were not there working, but you know, with me, I'm trying to get mine's retro pay as far as that. Even with clinics in my hospital, like let's just say a student externship at one location, and then they decide to take a job within the same company at another location. I still give that company that team who hosted that student, I give them that referral incentive, you know? Yeah. Now, if that student decides to take the job there, they don't get a referral incentive, right? The incentive was you got the student and they work for you now. But let's just say they decide, hey, this was a great place for me to do my externship, but I want to work at your one of your hospitals in Florida. Cool. That place that did the externship, they lost someone, but I'm going to give them a referral bonus because again, they did host that student, right? And that just gives them more. So we got to figure out how to incentivize technicians more, right? And again, I like your thought about levels, right? Levels, that's something that I think a lot of hospitals need to implement as well, like leveling up. Because a lot of technicians will come like, well, I need a raise. Well, what have you done? I'm sorry to be that person, but what have you done?
I've been here for 15 years, Walter.
Oh, okay. That worked. You've been here doing 15 years, doing the same thing you're doing right now. See, that's why I can't be somebody's boss like that. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You've been here for 15 years doing that.
Yeah. Nothing. You got some seniority. You don't get to work. You don't have to work Saturdays. You're
right.
And we've just done it that way for so long that we're so different than regular industries. And I think people who come to veterinary medicine outside of the veterinary industry to do practice management are kind of like, wait, what? You know?
Totally. And that's a whole nother conversation. Like,
but like, we don't even use our own technicians. Like, I was listening to, we have a partner that we work with that does onboarding for doctors. And they have this really structured training where it's a mentorship program and to develop new grads into high performing veterinarians in a short amount of time. It's a really great program. But you know, they incentivize the doctors to be mentors. Like how many times you go to a practice and the doctors that work there, it's just expected that they're going to help the new doctor. Right. They don't get any extra incentive for that. But
that's amazing.
We could incentivize our credential technicians. Like you got two credential technicians and you got four assistants and maybe two of them want to go through the program. How do you get the technicians, the credentialed ones you have in your team to be involved, to want to mentor these people, to want to help level them up, incentivize them.
That's it. And that's my thing, like with the crew that I work with, because I work with a group of hospitals, right? And the technicians building this externship program, there's no way. I'm the one man band on the end of it. Like, it's like, all right, Walter, you create this now, you got to create a team. So I have to use my team of hospitals, and that's the thing about it. But it's all about, you got to empower the team you have. And that's the one thing I will not do. And I tell people, before I bring an extern student into that hospital, I need to make sure that team feels like they haven't been empowered. Do you guys have everything you need? I can't let a technician student come in here and give them all these, like, you know, because in the externship program that I'm releasing in August, they'll get this externship welcome kit with a lot of little resources and perks and tools in it or whatnot. But I can't not, like, I need to make sure. And my hospital was like, oh, Walter, you really doing that? I'm like, yes. Like, what I look like giving them all the tools and resources, and the hospital that's facilitating them don't happen. So I need all my vet techs to have the vet tech cards. They can have the water bottles, whatever, the math calculator, the math book we give out. Make sure that the team is willing to accept that person in. It's like a family, right? That one kid, that's the foster kid, he comes into the new home. He feel a little weary because it's like, this is not my home, but like, you got to warm them into it and adopt them in. This thing is a family deal. And I tell people all the time, it's all about the safety, a circle of safety, right? The best clinics that perform the best have a circle of safety. They know they can depend on one another. They know that They got my back. They did this. Like, we had one clinic. I was like, y'all are amazing. And during the pandemic, they had a lot of technicians who had, they needed childcare. Well, they came up with their own way of fixing it. And I was like, who created that? They're like, we did. I was like, the doctor didn't come up? I'm like, no. And the doctor was such is such a great person that hit that her aura and how she thinks, they just, it feeds off of them. They decided that one day a week, they would rotate between two of them. They were like, we're vaccinated. All the kids can come to my house. So they literally had two locations and they rotated through during the week. Like one of them, they were like, and they paid each, like her being out, they put money out of their paychecks to pay her her full salary as if she was a technician at the clinic. Wow. You know, she is a technician, but she was like, somebody got to watch these kids, you know? So yeah. It's like six kids. And I'm like, I'm glad I didn't have to do that job. But they were a family and decided that, all right, I'll watch the kids on Tuesday while everybody's at work. So nobody have to find extra childcare or X, Y, and Z. And it was just, that's the kind of love and that's the kind of circle. And that's the kind of, you know, that's what you want to create. And yeah. Again, it
not comes an initiation.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing you want to do. And I think it goes back around full circle. A lot of them are credentialed technicians. A lot of them were on the job trained assistants. A lot of them were just kennel staff. But again, like you and I were talking earlier, you hardly see that doctor doing a lot of those things around there. They actually run that clinic. They are the workhorses. If they decided they didn't want to come to work that day, that clinic would shut down. So the fact that they know that they have that belonging, they have that ability to work with one another, they created their own family environment and their clinic runs smoothly. So it's all about, again, knowing who's in your practice, knowing what skill sets they have, what they need, the sense of belonging, purpose, fulfillment. It's a lot of things that go into actually making sure that we create that environment for veterinary technicians and kind of advance us into the next, you know, catapult years ahead of us. So never know what's upcoming next. So again, I do appreciate you definitely striving to make this happen. Definitely appreciate. Yeah,
you too. I mean, I'm still following you, and I think that the changes, just even if it's just like, you know, when we think about making changes in the veterinary industry, mm-hmm. Sometimes it just takes one person to shake it up a little bit and get people who have all been thinking the same thing for a long time. You know, we see that in all different areas of social structure, is that you get someone to speak up and then everybody is like, yeah, what he said. Like,
right.
Yeah, we can't stand all the times that the people ask their breeder for things. And he said, he made a joke about it. And now we're like, yeah.
And that's the thing about it. And people are literally, and I like how you said, like, sometimes you got to shake the bottle just a little bit. And I hope I shook it enough, because people are actually creating their own now, right? They're like, you know what? Walter's right. Let me go do this.
Yeah.
Or I can do that. Or I, you know, like, and again, and I tell people all the time, I'm not here to make some drastic change. If a drastic change happens, great. Love it. But I just simply want to pass the baton. I won't be here forever. I won't be in this space forever. I want to pass the baton so that I can have a seat back and look and be like, man, look at them run, man. I'm glad I passed the baton, because someone will have to take this at the end of the day and run with it. I don't want the legacy of knowing that, hey man, we can be independent technicians and create our own way and level up and be the best version of ourselves. I don't want that to stop with me. And I know I can't do it forever. So if the more people I can come in contact with doing podcasts and talking with you, Kimberly, or a veterinary technician or whoever it may be, just giving them a little bit of that baton to take and run. I don't want to make a drastic change, but I definitely want to be able to have a seat at the end of the day and say, I left the industry a little bit better than it was than the day I came in. And if I can do that and I can get anybody else to continue to do that, we will be running a great race. You know, this thing is not a sprint. And I think people think it's a sprint. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. And, you know, we are just one leg of the marathon. We started out sprinting when we were younger in the profession, running, and we figured out real quick, this is a marathon.
Yeah.
And this is not a marathon for myself. This is one where you pass the baton after a few miles. So
there was a few sprints and during COVID when everybody had to change real quick, but we realized really quickly, like, hey, we've been far behind the rest of
we've been far.
We have not taken advantage of every, we've not been better utilizing. And honestly, you know, statistically in 2021, nationally, practices had a decrease in efficiency by over 30%.
Wow.
So, you know, we can do better. We can better utilize, just like mm-hmm. you were saying, with those practices that are in credentialed states have higher productivity. Let's not spend time in chat forums arguing about who's a better technician, whether you're credentialed or not. Let's look at statistics and let's empower each other.
Oh my gosh. I tell people, I was like, that's great. I was like, I had a moment of like, you always had a moment of, am I really doing this? Is this really happening right now? And it just, I had technicians, I tell this joke all the time. They were in deep conversation in the group. And I'm talking about thousands of comments. And I'm like, what are these thousands of comments about? And I go up to the post and they are arguing over 0.09 versus 0.1. I can't make this up. 0.0. You got to give that dog 0.09. No, you could just give him 0.1. No, that's not. I'm like, we really doing this? We really talking about 0.09 versus 0.1. You have y'all can't even see that on the syringe. Just give the drug, you know. And I was like, wow, I'm like, if these are the trivial things that we, and I hate to say, but this was in a BTS group.
Oh boy.
And I'm like, this is how I know y'all ain't got nothing to do. So if we are getting that trivial, man, like we got to take a step back, man, and start to really utilize ourselves and ask ourselves, you know, what's next for our industry. So, yeah, I definitely believe that, you know, conversation like we were having today and those that are actually who follow me and say, you know, I appreciate you, Walter, or you inspired me to definitely change my aspect of veterinary medicine and then level up or kind of move forward or kind of push the industry forward. I definitely appreciate that. And I love when people tell me, hey, man, you inspired me, man, to do that. Like, because that fuels my flame to continue to, well, you know what? I got four more laps in me then, you know? So yeah. I definitely appreciate it. And I think you're doing an amazing job. And I appreciate this conversation for
Thank
sure.
You.
And
you too.
I would definitely have to return the favor because again, my podcast as well is coming back around. And I would definitely love to chat with you more on like what we need to do to help those of us who are old dinosaurs or becoming old dinosaurs kind of move to the next portion of vet med, because yeah. I think that's the scary part about it. I think that's the biggest fear for everybody is like, we don't want to leave vet med. When we've been called to this, right? I think we've all been called to vet med. If you're doing vet med, you've been called to this. Even mm-hmm. if you leave, some people like, and they even see it on my post, man, I do miss vet med, but I don't miss this part of it. So you've been called to it, whether you like it or not.
Right.
But even though we've been called to this, like at some point, I think people are scared that like, this is all we got. Like when I'm done being a technician on the floor, what's next? And I think people are really scared to figure out what's next, or we wait too late to figure out what's next. So I tell a lot of people, you know, hey, when you start turning 30 and you that hurt for you to get out of the bed that time, it's probably time to start looking at where's my next step, whether you're, again, creating something in your clinic, whether you're going towards practice manager stuff, consulting, liaison stuff, you know, creating your own pet sitting, whatever it may be. Yeah. Start thinking about that a little bit earlier on now versus waiting till, because I think I got lucky. You know, I think I got lucky. I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I'm old. I'm getting old. I need to figure something out. So,
you know, you're going to offend people who are like much older than you, right?
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. Good. They give it to me all the time. Walter, you're just a young, I'm like, okay. But start thinking about moving away from it. But I just appreciate the entire vet med space for the support of Skinny Go Live and the endeavors. And my talent coach told me to stop saying this line that I'm about to say, but it's just always in my heart. You know, I'm never out to offend anyone, or, you know, hurt anyone's feelings or try to discrediting anyone from doing what they're doing. Like I'm definitely not someone that wants to cause havoc in this profession, but I do believe people need to be transparent, true to themselves, and just learn to laugh a little bit. You know, it's one thing my grandmother told me before she passed away. She's like, sweetheart, it's two things about the truth. it's funny and it hurts, you know? so she like,
and I'm going to use that again.
Oh yeah. She tells me all the truth, it hurts and it's funny. So be transparent. She's like, don't be apologetic about something that you feel that is true and is trustworthy. And I just appreciate everyone who says, you know what, Walter, we got your back. We appreciate it. We appreciate your honesty. We appreciate your transparency. We appreciate you just keeping it real with us and kind of helping the industry move forward. And again, you know, I'm not for everyone and everyone is not for me, but I do appreciate those that are groups and companies and organizations that say, hey, you know, this guy's actually doing his thing and actually trying to provide some good for us, even if people don't appreciate some of the things that he says or does. So I definitely appreciate PSI. I appreciate all the industry folks that come out and say, hey, you know, we appreciate you. And the vet detectives, like, yeah, I mean, you guys are amazing. And I appreciate you guys having me on today as well.
I'm so thankful that you agreed to be my guest and share your knowledge with our fan base. And definitely would like to invite you back to have that discussion on what do we do next.
Yes, totally. Action items. That's action. Next. Action
All
items.
The actions. Yes. So thank you so much. I appreciate no it. I appreciate your time. I think this is a topic that's going to continue to evolve and we'll talk about it in the future and it'll be different.
Awesome. And if anybody needs to follow me on social media, if you're listening there, you can definitely follow me on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. You know what? I even give my email out every now and again. It's simply skinnygolive@gmail.com. So if you have any questions or comments or anything, you can always hit me up. I'll try to answer them as soon as I can. Sometimes that didn't happen for a week or two, but I do apologize.
Busy man.
Yeah, I need an assistant, and all the assistants that I tried to hire, they're like, nah, bro, you got way too much going on. So so I try to one man band it, but I do appreciate everyone. And from the bottom of my heart, I love each and every one of you all that are in VetMed. And that's really, we in this thing together. You know, my talent coach tell me all the time, he's like, bro, you got to get your wristbands. Cause I say it all the time to him. I'm like, hey, I am them. They are me. We are VetMed. And I think that's one thing that stands true to me. Like I always have my VetMed folks back, even when I feel like my back is against the wall. So anyone can always reach out, even if they just need to have a conversation and just need to be told that they're doing an amazing job in life. I'm always for it. So yeah, I am here. I am here for you all.
Thank you. Everybody check out his social handles. You won't be disappointed. You will laugh and you will have some entertainment. You'll have some edutainment.
Edutainment. There edutainment. It is. We educate and we learn together. We do it all in laughter and fun. So I love it.
Awesome. Thank you, Walter Brown. And thank you, listeners. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of The Vet Detective. Like what you heard? Be sure to subscribe and tune in next time as we unfold our next veterinary mystery.